Tacky Talk time, folks, with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy joining us for our weekly update. Tacky, how are you?
Hey, Joe. Happy to see you on a wonderful Wednesday.
Here we are. It's April. It feels like summertime. It's crazy.
It is crazy. And it's a good kind of weird crazy. After a couple months of freezing you, then slightly warmer teas and freezing you again. I think it's welcome and deserved for us to open our windows this week, not to use any more heating systems for a bit, and to enjoy the warm weather. And of course, Walston Beach and other city parks, as well as the state park lands, are open for business for essentially purposes as they get ready for the warmer weather.
Yeah, I see some of the outdoor dinings already started in. And speaking of the beach, you were on TV on Walston Beach this week.
Yeah, every so often I'm on television. Big surprise, that's not with you, Joe, sadly. The Fox 25 was out, and we did a live shoot on Monday at 10:45. Just a quick 5-10 minutes, just reminding folks, you know, how much improvements happened in Walston Beach over my lifetime. People do forget I grew up here, and I remember the beach with no syringes and other random things floating through the water, playing of horseshoes and jellyfish, which is the only things that would show up, and bluefish runs and bogeys and all that stuff. And when flounder were plentiful. So I remember those days. I am not a water person. I've not pretended not to be a water person. I'm not a boat person. But I do remember my childhood days on Walston Beach and how far it's come. And thanks to Fox 25 on putting some work in that day as well. They were out there with the crews helping move some beach sand around, especially around the stairwells, which does happen due to major storms. And, you know, while we had a couple of big storms in Nor'easter, amazingly, the beach is actually not in bad shape this past winter. Generally, the winter weather will blow the sand into the bay or blow the sand onto the sidewalk. So, you know, it's actually in pretty good shape. When I walked out, I was like, this isn't bad. Given the fact that we didn't have a whole lot of big storms. And of course we had a movie crew there last week pretending it was winter. Remember the trucks dumping snow and ice as they continue to shoot the Ben Affleck film?
That's right. That's right. And speaking of movies, like Marky Mark was in at Stop and Shop on Newport Avenue this week.
I did see the headline in the Patriot Ledger. I mean, you remember he was also down at Mary Lou's down in West Quincy.
Oh, that's right.
So, you know, the whole time kid, you know, was back in his stomach gowns. But, you know, we Quincy folks, and, you know, as a Dorchester guy came over the bridge. So, you know, I grew up in that era of the Dot versus the Quincy guys. Very, very big part of my childhood is like the Dot over.
Well, speaking of the beach, we should let folks know April 22nd, Friends of Walston Beach be out there doing a spring cleaning, and they'd love folks to come by and help them.
Yeah. One of the messages I gave is please take your trash so we don't have to get it for you. You know, Friends of Walston Beach has been, you know, very good community partner to the DCR and Walston Beach for, God, over 20 years at this point. And they do, you know, a couple of beach cleanups. They do some fundraisers. They do family fun day during the summertime. So, I mean, it's all community groups. It's all volunteer driven. If you got a few extra minutes, you know, swing by, say hello, and pick up a couple pieces of trash. But I have this weird quirk about trash. I have a thing about people not picking up trash. It's just like, you know, the world is not your garbage bin. And of course, we are coastal communities, there's environmental issues too that are a little bit different from inland communities, because plastic in particular gets into the oceans. You all know about microplastics, I hope, at this point, and how much our bodies filled with it now from everything that is plastic driven. And plastic doesn't decompose properly and it just follows the currents to other parts of Massachusetts and maybe to get out to sea, but a lot of stuff follows the coastline. So, you know, in particular, as a waterfront community, you know, especially trash, we just only end up, in our beach and our waterways, not necessarily on our own beach, but maybe on someone else's beach down the ways, you know, so-called someone else's problem, but it's really ours. And, you know, it also ruins a lot of the work that's been done on many, many decades to get the beach to, quite frankly, a very, very lovely and usable condition. And also lifeguards. We need lifeguards, folks. The DCR is hiring lifeguards. So if anybody's looking for a summer job, I'm fairly confident that if you're a very good swimmer, they'll train you in CPR. You have a previous lifeguard experience. I think there's extra money involved. So if you're looking for a summer job, please go to the DCR website. Just Google DCR lifeguard jobs. It'll just pop up. And like last year, there's a huge shortage of workforce, especially temporary workforce in the summertime for things like lifeguards. So, you know, if you're, and you're going to get paid pretty well, actually. It's very competitive for workers this summer.
Yep, absolutely is. And I know here in Quincy, you can get training to right at the Lincoln Hancock Community School pool from Quincy Recreation Department.
Yeah, and that gives you a leg up on if you want a lifeguard job. There's a combination of words at the DCR. I actually think that gives you like a little bit of a heads up on the pay.
Yeah. So well worth your time. Speaking of openings, Tech, I had a chance to talk this week with the Chief Human Resource Officer from the MBTA, and they are looking to hire 2,800 people in 12 months.
Yeah, it was, remember, 1,000 people back when Paul Tech was the general manager in November. So clearly, the prior general manager's rapid exit reveals that a transition would have revealed exactly how bad things are.
And he said these are not, you know, they're not new positions. This is due to attrition, retirement, some resignation also.
Yeah, I've heard somebody say this before. I mean, you know, there's small government and there's no government. And the MBTA was definitely heading for no government as well as the small government. And this is the consequences of moving that direction. I'm sure that the new general manager will start to peel back the carpet on the floor, so to speak, to see what's underneath of it and start to discover some creative accounting and creative movement of people to give the impression that, you know, they were more fully staffed than they were. I'm still personally convinced they were contracting out workers, personally speaking, because this is a very common trick in government where they give the impression they're fully employed, but they're really just contractors working a gig for 6 months to maybe 2 years and put them on bond, which is, by the way, adds interest to that payroll, which is not good for taxpayers or in MBTA's case, you know, including ridership paying fare payers. So fare payers and taxpayers don't do well if you have permanent employees on capital bond. It just bleeds more money. But I mean, it's kind of just like moving parts. We shrank government, but didn't look we shrank government. We're just making you pay more for government. And we've seen this in the Republican administrations, in the Bill Water era, continuing to Jane Swift and Paul Cellucci. Deval Patrick finally eliminated this at the Mass Highway Department when it was Mass Highway Department. And then the Baker administration, who knows? We'll see actually Mitt Romney did the same thing too. We'll wait to see if Maura Healey finds something else out that Charlie Baker was doing, but we won't know for a while. She gets settled in. But it happened at city level. I mean, you know, the accusation from Bill Phelan to Jim Sheets and then Tom Koch to Bill Phelan. And, you know, it's not like a new issue, but it's always been a campaign platform for past mayor races about how they utilize payroll and how they utilize contractors on payroll that would just cost taxpayers more money in the long term. So, like I said, this is speculation on my part. I know it's not an uncommon practice in executive branch, let's wait and see what the new general finds and reveals. But at the same time, though, again, you know, they're paying bonuses and they're looking for premium dollars and they'll pay for training. And the MBTA is trained work. It is skilled labor. So, you know, you don't need a lot of prerequisites to show up. They'll teach you everything you need to know and get paid for it. You get paid to get taught to go to work.
Yes, that's right. And they'll help you attain any special licenses or certifications that you need as well. $7,500 sign-on bonuses for a lot of positions. So it could be very lucrative.
Yeah, you don't need to call me for a job. Remember the old thing, call your politician for a job at the T? Well, 2,800 positions open. I'm fairly confident you don't need to call me this time.
Exactly. So let's talk about the budget. That's the big topic on the State House this week, right?
Yeah, around noontime-ish, the House Work Committee on Ways and Means will have an executive session to basically go through the formality of voting in favor of the budget that's coming out of House Ways and Means. And historically speaking, you know, you get the Democrats voting with the chair and then you get the Republicans voting to abstain. Historically, that's what happens. Not always, but historically. I don't know what's in it yet. Obviously, I made my suggestions to the chair of Ways and Means some weeks back. Budget and amendments are due on Friday. So we have a very brief window here, but I've been doing a lot of budgets, a lot of years. I think this is budget number, let's see here, 23 or 24. on my side of time. Yeah, well, Michael Morrissey had a seat on Ways and Means. So, of course, Michael being Michael was like, well, we have to know about the budget now because Michael's Michael. So next thing you know, I'm doing a whole ton of budget work on top of the other work I do on the committee, on top of the constituent work, on top of the special projects, on top of the, you know, it was a lot of stuff going on. But my own staff has now veteranized as well, so to speak. And they have about five budgets under their belt as well. So, you know, this is kind of a job that you just kind of teach institutional knowledge to your staff. Honestly, they can manage a lot of stuff on their own. The supervision shifts. The more they know, the more they do. I don't have to, like, you know, be on them like every minute, right? I mean, that's the point of teaching staff how to do things.
Yeah, right. The biggest thing you can teach them is to make sure and ask if they don't know. Otherwise, do your job.
That's absolutely correct. And that's, you know, and I ask people where I don't know either. I mean, there's no shortage of people around Beacon Hill that have more years under the belt than I do. You can believe that. Has done a lot of like physical hands-on work and a lot of things where, you know, they were the ones who typed it up. They're the ones who had to sort it out. They're the ones who had to like index and table contents, various documents. And then, you know, I still know people that wrote various parts of the general laws, and they can tell me intimately about, you know, how it was done, why it was done, and who was done and where it was, and how come we had to do it the way it was done. And I myself have some, you know, knowledge about this and that too, which I share going the other direction. So, and also as committee chair, you know, people call me with questions. For example, I had a rep from Western Mass, you know, ring me about the U.S. citizenship requirement to get a liquor license and how does that really work in terms of application. So, you know, we had a ruling from the ABCC on that was done about early 90s, I think. So, you know, we have that document available and we made it available to the rep from Western Mass. And actually, the answer is that you have a corporation.
Yeah.
Corporations aren't people for the purposes of licensing. You don't have to be a U.S. citizen corporation. So there are constructs because you can actually hold an alcohol license as a personal individual, which I do not recommend, by the way, but you can legally. But you have to be a U.S. citizen to hold a liquor license personally.
Well, you don't want to be liable personally if there's a problem, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. That's why you should always have a corporate shield. Again, as a I always recommend a slightly more expensive option by corporation versus LLC or LLPs. But again, I like, as an attorney, I like case law that's solid and the lines are clear regarding corporate practices. But that's just me. I mean, I do understand that everyone likes the idea of paying taxes, but tax shield, there's more tax benefits on the other ones. I just like more assurity about your corporate shield.
So can we talk a little bit about the tax relief package that's part of the budget proposal, Tacky? There are a number of proposed changes.
Yeah, we're actually going to vote on this, I believe, as a separate piece, I think. It's I'm a little confused on this one, I think, as you can tell. My understanding was doing this as two separate bills. We're going to vote on this proposal tomorrow, a House bill, I think it's 3070 now. You do just know all the numbers blur in your brain. And then the budget debate is in 2 weeks from time.
Okay.
So this tax reduction proposal is baked into the House Ways and Means version of the budget. And the Senate knows it's coming. So I'm confident the Senate has its own proposal. I'm going to tell you, it could be too different from ours, right? I would suspect. That being said, you know, they're going to have to bake into their Senate Ways and Means proposal whatever tax adjustments they desire to do. And obviously, the governor made her proposal very early on as, you know, part of her commitment to taxpayers and voters when she ran for governor. And some of the stuff was very similar to what we did last cycle. I had not expected to be massively different from the proposals that we did last year.
Right. And those. I guess we're waylaid by the Chapter 62F ruling, though. Is that right?
That's correct. I mean, yeah. The 62F end up in 3.5 billion dollars ish of money was given back to taxpayers proportional to the amount of taxes you paid. So, an average about 14% of the taxes you paid would go back to you. As you can all guess, the people who got the lion's share of the 3.5 billion wasn't you or me. It was the highest earning taxpayers in the state. It is based on how much tax you paid, not, you know, after what you don't pay after you do all the tax math that we know that goes on. So that, you know, so if you're a wealthy individual, you can bring the tax burden down significantly to perhaps even get a refund. But that was against the actual taxes you already paid prior to tax day.
Right. Yeah. Part of this relief bill actually is to change that to kind of equalize it. What do you think about that?
Yeah. I mean, this makes a degree of sense. The two things that happened that really, one big thing that really irked us was the whole concept of a tax credit. So, you know, our interpretation based on the last time this happened back in what, 87, 86, you know, it was done as a tax credit. You would actually fill your tax forms. You did pay, you showed you paid taxes, you can apply. So for example, my mom's in Social Security, she doesn't pay taxes, she doesn't qualify for 62F. Now, but the tax forms will guarantee that because you have to put as part of your taxes and use the 62F tax credit to offset your next tax bill.
Right, as opposed to getting a check, right?
As opposed to getting a check. And that actually made more sense. And you all saw the chaos with the IRS about whether this was taxable income, because if you're if you pay a deduction, meaning you file Schedule C, Schedule A's, you know, whether it be business or personal, state refund can be taxed by the IRS. If you're a standing deduction, state taxpayer, meaning you just take the state deduction, you have no expenses, you know, that is non-taxable by the IRS. I think it's a 1099-G.
Sounds right, yeah.
Yeah, I know. We're trying to recall tax forms by brain on the fly. You know, there was a lot of confusion because that tax rebate, you know, how did it apply? And IRS, I think, ruled essentially that if you were a standing deduction master's taxpayer, you know, you wouldn't have to pay taxes, but if you were a standing deduction, you would. This problem would not have happened if it was actually part of the tax credit for this year's tax applications, because you would just deduct the credit at the very bottom. And I always say credits are cash. You know, you can either just get rid of your tax burden or get a refund or get a large refund if you have paid taxes. Secondly, what the proposal from the House is that we want to make it equal distribution. So as I kind of stated earlier, the way it's set up, you pay 14% refund or credit against your tax burden of $100. It's very, very different from someone who's paid $500,000 in taxes and 14%. So obviously, it's not hard math, folks. You know, you pay big taxes, you get 40% against that tax paid. Keyword, tax paid, not what the end of your tax bill looks like in the application. So, you know, you have to get past all these basic stuff. You know, what is the tax paid? You take it off of that. So, you know, we want to make sure that everybody gets their fair share, and everyone should get an equal distribution of all of it, which actually would help people to lower end of tax credit, a tax payment to get a higher credit, while also keeping the people at the far end of the other spectrum from, you know, outweighing the rest of us regarding the tax benefit. So, you know, if you're making like 30 grand a year, this 14% was nice. It's not very helpful, but it was an equal distribution of $3.5 billion across, I think, like 3 million taxpayers. You know, that person making $30,000 would benefit a whole lot more. And to be frank with you, I really don't have a lot of sympathy for folks at the high end of the tax bracket, because they'll get something back, but there's no reason why it's proportional. And as you can kind of imagine, this was done in the 80s under Reaganomics and so-called trickle-down economics, which has proven to never work. I don't care what anybody says. It's been tried over again. It doesn't work. And the reason Trump tax cuts, again, shows it doesn't work. You know, it actually will create benefit for part of the economy that will put that money back into the economy to keep the economy going. So, you know, the reality is that, you know, you have a whole ton of money. It's how many pizzas you can buy at a pizza shop, so to speak, right? But if you put money back on Main Street, people, working class people, you know, they're going to be at the pizza shop more often.
Yeah, they have more liquid disposable income, so they're going to use it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And they live a little closer to the margins. I think a lot of us now, because of inflation, has been a little closer to the margins than I would like regarding trying to budget my, you know, expenses, while also saving for the future, saving for unexpected costs. And I'm not gonna lie. It's not easy. Obviously, but it's not easy given inflation. Today, inflation numbers came down to 5%. We'll hope it keeps coming down. But if you're the wage growth has not kept up with inflation, and of course, again, the ones at the higher echelon, has a little, not little, have a lot more ability and flexibility of how to manage the finances than the majority of folks that are watching us now. Is and make no bones about the fact I clip a lot of coupons digitally these days. I've always have, but now it's like extra hunt.
I wonder if it makes sense to look at the whole tax code too, as opposed to a flat income tax rate, to look at a graduated rate like federal government.
Yeah, that's been on the ballot before my time. Failed every time it's gone to the ballot in various forms before I've been around. I'm a little too young for those ballot questions. And yeah, the public just does not want to go for graduated taxes and will not give the power to the legislature to do it. The Fair Share Tax is the first graduated tax system under this constitution. The constitution mandates that you have to provide a flat tax for the same class of people, which is left up to the courts determine what class means. So, for example, my mom's a senior citizen, the senior circuit break, her tax credit, she's considered a class of people that qualifies for that. You may say it's discriminatory against young people, but the court doesn't say so.
Well, I mean, if it's based on their income, then no, it's not discriminatory. I don't think so. It's based on your particular financial situation.
That's absolutely correct. It doesn't change the overall tax burden in terms of what seniors would pay. They just receive an additional benefit as a senior citizen, which we actually House will address by doubling the senior circuit tax credit from $1,200 to $2,400. As Speaker Mariano and Bruce Ayers and myself have been on QATV, our annual visit to remind people to fill the senior circuit tax break her tax form as tax day is coming up next week on the 18th. Even if you don't pay taxes and you're over the age 65, and you're not in any kind of government subsidized housing or any form, and you cannot be claimed as dependent by anyone else in your family, and you're not filing separately, those are the three things of why you can't qualify. You definitely should fill out your Schedule CB, strongly encouraged, and there's also a 3-year look back. However, this double from $1,200 to $2,400 credit is forward looking, so you can only get the max of up to $1,200 prior. This tax year and prior, so the $24 is forward tax, so next tax cycle. So, but again, I always again we are going to. I'm reminding you again as we keep reminding every so often that you're over 65, you're a homeowner or renter, and you don't meet one of those three disqualifying factors I have before you meet the income guidelines. Please, please do look at the senior circuit tax break for this tax year, and if you were turned 65 in the past 3 years. Definitely look to amend your form. It is cash. So you pay no taxes. Like my mom, who's on Social Security, she gets a nice check from the Commonwealth.
When my mom was alive, she benefited from it also, and it's a substantial amount. It can be very helpful to folks in that situation.
Absolutely. I understand the property tax burden is very high. I see my mom's tax bills. I do my mom's taxes. So I'm familiar with it too.
Right, especially here in a high tax state. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and if you get like up to $1,200 back, that's $400 back from the property tax.
That's right. Yep, that's
But it's
helpful.
being paid by taxpayers, not the city government. Let's be careful with it. It is taxpayers funding the tax credit that we're providing from the state, not the city government.
Good
So
point. Yes.
yeah, just to let you know, it's a shared burden among all of us in the Commonwealth to provide this tax credit to senior citizens.
Right, exactly. Seeing as we're on the topic of these tax credits, there's a bunch of them in this proposal. Child independent tax credit, estate tax, rental reduction. There's quite a few.
Yeah, a lot. They address working class, real life folks that we're dealing with today. I mean, the child care tax credit, we've talked about this before. I filed legislation on various forums over the years to try to address this matter. We're going to phase it in over 3 fiscal years for a one-time create one refundable $600 credit for dependents. So it's not just a child care credit; it's actually dependent of a member of family household. So you're filing as head of household, or you have a dependent in your household. It can be an adult individual that's a dependent on you. You can demonstrate that person's dependent. You can get a $600 credit per individual. It's going to be moved into 3 years, starting in fiscal year 24, 25, into 6, and of course finishing in fiscal year 27. So it starts at 310. You can get back pre-dependent and close out at $614 in 2027 fiscal, 2027 fiscal year. And we get rid of the cap. So this is actually pretty important about the cap, because I understand that, you know, it's not just about how many kids you have, it's also how many dependents you have. So let's say you're taking
for an aging parent or something, right? Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, yep. We live in multi-generational households now, or even if they don't live in your household, you know, they depend heavily on your income to get by, whether it be, a sibling with severe impairments, or you have a much older mom and dad, or even grandma and granddad, as the case may be, plus you have your own children. You know, this will go a long way in helping families out to support their children and those older folks and other folks that took care of you that you love. And we think it's going to impact about 700,000 people in the state through this program. The estimated cost would be about $165 million the first year. But when the 3 years is up, you know, we're projecting about $487 million. So we're doing this phased-in approach, given the size of the price tag, so we can kind of phase it into our budget costs.
Yeah, I think that makes sense for sure. And like you say, it's going to have a benefit. And again, those are folks that will put that money back into the economy.
Oh, I know, absolutely. And the cost of, we talk about this all the time, but the cost of not just raising children, but also the cost of our taking care of our parents, as you all know, I do that, is going up. The cost of medication, you know, the cost of different needs they have as they get older, they need some specialized care, specialized diets, in my mom's case. It doesn't get cheaper. And between, you know, COVID shortfalls in 2020 and high inflationary costs in 2022, this actually might be helpful. And now we're hoping moving to a deflation. Well, maybe not deflation. Deflation is a whole different problem, bad. But we're hoping more calmer inflationary period. You know, this extra money in the next 3 years is moved to a more calmer, stable inflationary period. I mean, really, we'll go a lot long way.
Oh, yeah.
Once we reach that point.
I think another one, too, that will have a big impact, especially because of the high cost of housing here in Massachusetts, is the change in the estate tax.
Yeah, this is one that we proposed last year. Obviously, I'm very supportive of this. We're one of the few states where we're the only state left, I think, that has a requirement that if you cross $1 million in estate tax, the entire estate is taxable. It is not $1 million deduction. So, and it hasn't changed like forever. So, you're going to increase it from $1 million to $2 million. And then we will allow you to have a deduction of $2 million if you exceed $2 million. We think that most folks will benefit from this, you know, under $2 million. Obviously, the big thing is your home on the estate tax. The property values are only going to go up. Despite rising interest rate, property value has really not gone down much. Rents are not rapidly dropping in the greater Boston area, nor is home prices. I mean, I think they're kind of a little stagnated, but it's not like they dropped 20%. So, and as we come into a less inflationary period, and the Fed Reserve will probably start lowering rates sometime, maybe late 2024, you know, it's going to cause a spike in housing valuation again. So, you know, that'd be subject to estate tax. And of course, you know, if you have even if you don't have a big state in terms of value of home and other goods and properties, you know, definitely consult an attorney, consult a, you know, estate planner, consult your accountant as we hopefully are able to pass these tax changes this year. And, you know, it's a good time to start to reevaluate your, you know, tax situation as you, whatever stage your life is in, but also if you're at a stage in life where you want to start looking at your estate and how to receive maximum benefit or leave something behind for folks, you know, I advise you to strongly see your accountant, your financial planner, and your attorney.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's like you say, different phases in life require different professionals to advise you.
Absolutely. And with these changing tax codes here, I think there's more we're going to talk about. You know, this actually will be a good time, where, probably sometime towards the end of this year, for everyone, you know, listening to do a reevaluation.
Short-term capital gains tax changes, too. That's another one on the books.
Yeah, this one is something we're going to work with the governor on. The governor had proposed this as part of hers. So short-term capital gains, capital gains are caused from the sale of homes and sales of stock. It's at 12% for short-term capital gains, which I'm trying to remember what short-term capital gains really means. I think it's less than 5 years. I'm trying to remember how this
I
works.
don't know either. Yeah.
I don't know either. As you guys know, I don't have real capital gains.
Likewise, yeah.
To figure this one out. I also have TurboTax that helps me out too. I do hold some small mutual funds, but it's not like I make a lot of money. As I'm also trying to figure out my own retirement plans at this age.
I get dividends that come in cents.
You sum it up. We're not talking like big money here. It's like couple bucks, couple bucks. So if your short-term capital gains is now at 5%, your long-term capital gains is taxed at, I'm sorry, short-term's 12%, long-term 5%. Your long-term capital gains are taxed at the same rate as your income tax and your passive income tax, interest income. So if but if you get stuff in a short period of time and basically your for lack of term, your day trading, be taxed at 12%. So, the governor had, proposed adjusting this. We haven't really looked at this issue seriously. And God, before I came to the state, I was working in the state. I think the last time this was addressed in 94, maybe.
Okay.
This is a long, long issue that's been done. I think we tweaked it here and there, but for the most part, it hasn't really changed. So this is actually very substantial. So what we're going to do is we're going to do a 2 year phase in to reduce the short term gains from 12% to 5%, meaning that the next year, next tax year, you'll be taxed 8%. And then in year after that, we reduce it to 5%. So the rough estimated cost is about $67 million in the first year implementation. And then once it's reached full implementation, it's going to cost about $130 million a year. So, it's a different environment we're living in. I mean, the idea of short-term gains, people think it's like day traders calling I'm sorry, Wall Street day traders. They have this idea that people remember the movie Wall Street, and things like that. I'm dating myself, but today, I mean, Robinhood and brokerage accounts online, people like you and me are able to plan our own retirement fund by putting our meager monies into like an index, for example, right?
Right.
Or money market. And right now I'm big on CDs and treasuries, big on CDs, folks, because I don't after the CD rate interest, at some point the rate interest run will stop and
Yeah.
I'm going to be back earning no money on my savings account. You can tell as every call we talk about, I'm always frustrated with the fact that a decade's worth of just money not earning any real interest.
Well, really losing when you compare it to inflation. Yeah.
That's absolutely true. So I'm always frustrated by I save money, but it doesn't mean nothing. I mean, this reflects also kind of a real situation in the world today. A lot more folks are engaging in their own retirement, the end of pension programs. Quite frankly, it's in the private sector, and I concepts of 401ks, or 413, 403 Bs for not-for-profits, and I'm a 457 for government. Beyond those, and people are going to, put money on the side, especially last year. I mean, who didn't try to dabble in the market last year in 2022? During COVID, people were flush with cash all over the country. Saving accounts were higher then, and the people figured to put the money at work because interest rates were quite horrible. Of course, at the end of 2022 was pretty horrific for everyone, and 2023 is here now. So, this is again really is a, you think about it carefully. It's really is a modernization because you can just pick up your phone, make your trades, and of course, take personal responsibility for your own money. And, maybe you can get some short-term income, and this will, in the long term, in the long over the course of 3 years, this will normalize that with your income tax rate.
There are a couple more. One of them I know you'll be able to talk about. One, the other one is a little bit bizarre, but I know the earned income tax credit is proposed to change as well. Not drastically, quite honestly, but enough to make a difference.
Yeah, we've incrementally increased this over the years. Even Charlie Baker had proposed increasing this over time. And you know, we increased from like, 20% to 25% to 30%. Now we're going to 40%. And the earned income tax credit really does target, again, incomes of under $57,000, which, a lot of folks are in Massachusetts. We estimate about 396,000, so close to 400,000 taxpayers, and costs about $91 million. As we kind of talked a little bit earlier, same with the deduction on child and adult dependents. And of course, we also have the rent deduction here, increasing the rent deduction from $3,000 to $4,000. Another thing we haven't touched in a long time that impacts about 881,000 folks that pay rent. That's money back into people's pockets that put back into Main Street economies. As you can tell, there's a reoccurring theme here, right? The goal is to try to get more money back into folks to put it back onto the Main Street. Like I said, we're not that concerned about people who have a ton of cash, but it isn't like they're coming down to Walls and Center to partake of the myriad of restaurants in Walls and Center, right? So putting some more money back to folks will help local businesses, and income tax credit's a way of doing that.
Single sales factor apportionment, Jackie. This is one I know we talked about before we started today. Mostly has to do with businesses that are working out of state, right?
Yeah, this one's a little more controversial because anytime you touch a business tax, the first thing you think of is what Washington, D.C. does, is that they give, this giveaway, which, what the Trump administration did when you really look at the total number. That being said, states are a little bit different from federal government. People don't realize states compete for business with other states. So, back in the 90s, we had some really bad habits. So to try to keep companies like Raytheon around, for example, they gave them like a tax break, but a 5-year requirement to make a minimum number of employees. When that number hit 5 years and that requirement was no longer there, they just started like leaving. And they used that tax savings that we gave them to leave with, which is kind of the irony of the situation. So here we got Raytheon, we gave you a tax break. You got to keep an X number of employees. Like, sure, we'll keep them for 5 years pursuant to law. After 5 years are up, they just up and left to a lower tax state. And they use our tax credits to move with. And then we did a similar thing for groups like Fidelity, the big brokerage banks. We did that as well. And of course, no surprise, after a few years, all those tax credits we gave them and tax breaks, they use that money to lift stakes and go somewhere else because they found another state could offer them an even better deal. And then you've seen like places in New Hampshire also offer tax breaks, again, to try to attract Massachusetts business to relocate there. So what a lot of states have done is that this is a race to the bottom. So a lot of states are kind of like, this is getting kind of crazy. So they've created this concept, which people have varying opinions on regarding single sales factor apportionment. So right now you take a location, payroll, and receipts as your three factors for apportionment of taxes if you're a multi-state corporation. This would make it a single factor apportionment based solely on how much money you make in Massachusetts in receipts. And this is consistent with 39 other states in the country. So if you're a multi-state business, you now have a similar tax structure to other places located around the country is one of 39. Hopefully we become 40. And this should stop the race to the bottom behavior. Do I think it still may happen? Yeah, but I mean, they're very targeted small industries that are niche industries in Massachusetts. For example, aviation is a niche industry, right? It's also hard to move a giant aviation plant. But that being said, I've not seen recently being the last decade, states moving around offering special tax incentives to lure a business from one state to another. Single sale factor tax is not the sole reason, I'm not saying it is, but it's a reason why we don't do the race to the bottom on a state-by-state level as much as we have done in the past. Remember, New Hampshire was offering at one point tax breaks to executives who moved the business there? It was like, you don't have to pay taxes already, but we'd even give you even money back. I mean, some insane concept to move your business. Oh, yeah, we're going to give your CEOs a whole bunch of money to move their business. I'm like, really?
I know.
So, I mean, it's, in their case, New Hampshire is very property tax driven.
Yes, so, people forget about that. It's like, there's no sales tax, but there's huge property taxes.
Yeah, it's worse than us. I mean, there's more people move New Hampshire from Massachusetts, actually. We keep driving up the value of property in New Hampshire, and the people who lived there a long time are getting murdered on property taxes caused by people moving into a low tax state. Not surprising, you know, places like Florida, again, you know, no tax state. However, you know, county government can still tax you. And people forget that there's county taxes. And, you know, they also have a huge property tax rate too. So, you know, a government still has a function, even in no income tax state somehow, and they're going to get you one way or the other.
You have to fund your education, your public safety. You need money from somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Unless you like being on dirt roads that lead to nowhere with no lighting. So take him a guy who lives in a dirt road. You know, hopefully this will help, again, stop the race at the bottom on tax incentives. And I do understand this will be controversial, folks, because, again, it's a business tax.
Right, yeah.
The savings to businesses will be about $150 million in the first year. But in the end, after we have a little of a hiccup spike, so to speak, on the initial applications, it would cost about $79 million annually to taxpayers. So that's the size of the tax burden.
So yeah, the final cost for all these packages by 2024 is just over $1 billion, by 2026, excuse me, by about $1.1 billion. So can the state afford that, I guess, is the overall question.
Yeah, phasing it in will be helpful for that. And I think the first hit to us would be about $645 million, something like
that's
that.
That's right. Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously it will rise to $1.1 billion after 3 implementation. And we do another kind of change to kind of offset that impact. And that is the stabilization fund or the rainy day fund. And we talk about that a lot here as well. The rainy day fund's in that $8 billion zone, which is
that's a lot of rain.
Yeah, it's astounding amount. All capital gains are automatically put into that. So cap gains go first into rent stabilization fund. Our lessons of not using capital gains as the main part of the budget, because cap gains can be unpredictable and scary. And we screwed ourselves multiple times back in the 90s and again in the 2000s. So yeah, we stopped that. So cap gains goes into stabilization fund. Put in perspective, the budget coming out should be about $58 billion. The stabilization fund is likely to go up again as part of this upcoming budget. I'm not sure how much, but you know, yeah, we're talking, you know, well past 5% of the budget, which is generally the recommendation of most accounting and good government agencies. So, you know, we're going to, you know, look at, you know, well close, we're closing in what, near 20%, perhaps maybe 18-ish%. So, you know, when the rainy day comes, there's always going to be a rainy day in this gig. You know, I think we'll be well prepared for that. So, but, you know, addressing that as well, the way it's set up now is that if the funds in the fiscal year exceeds 15% of the budget revenues, and the excess is then given to the rainy day fund. So, so we have 50% at the end of the fiscal year, meaning the end of the whole fiscal year, and we do our final accounting, because that's 15% of the of budget revenues. It goes to what we refer to as tax reduction fund, which translates to increasing your standard deduction in the following tax year. Mm-hmm. So by overfilling the stabilization fund at the end of the fiscal year, it triggers a standard deduction reduction for the next fiscal year for one time. This has happened actually a couple of times already. People just don't realize it happened because you don't look at your standard deduction every year and know what your previous standard deductions are.
No, you don't bother to check it. You just go with what you have. Yeah,
that's exactly right. And then that didn't happen last year because of 62F.
Mm-hmm.
So all that excess already came back to you. Hence, there was no overflow in the stabilization.
Right.
So given how robust the stabilization fund is right now, we do expect to keep more money going to rainy day. We're going to change the cap to 25.5%. Because of the sheer fact that we have so much money in there, and it gives ability to help buffer against the $1.1 billion tax impact on these deductions and credits that we're increasing or have created. The other thing that's going to help us is sports betting. You saw in the news about $300,000 in taxes on the first go around. I think it's not going to be $300,000 every month. It thinks like, you know, half a million, you know, 100,000, you know, 200,000. Yeah. I think every month will be different based on the events that are going on in the sports scene. And of course, marijuana money, we talked about this before a little bit too, you know, has reached capacity in the sense that there's only so many customers, folks, right? You do hit a plateau. Same thing with sports betting. It will plateau.
Yep.
And you know, now we're going to have a steadier number. And of course, the casinos and the racetrack, you know, has, I won't say fully recovered, but they're in a whole lot better shape than they were during COVID.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So,
and the millionaire's tax now, too.
Yeah, we have the millionaire's tax, which we're not really budgeting in. We're kind of waiting to see what it really does.
Right.
So these $1.1 billion in tax credits at the end of 3 years is a lot of revenue sources that we've created in the past decade, but also a new revenue source with the advent of sports betting. And then, you know, like I said, changing stabilization fund around. I fully expect the stabilization fund, if we don't have a major recession coming up, you know, we'll probably get to 20% of the budget, which is more than I think safe in terms of ensuring that we can keep core services going in case of a major downturn.
Yeah.
This is prudent and this is smart budgeting at this point. And again, the goal is to put money back into people that will put money back onto Main Street.
With that happy note, we got to go.
Yeah. It's. I hope you guys have not made you too bored and crazy about tax code stuff. And definitely please consult an accountant, a estate planner, and your attorney. Don't rely on Joe and me to tell you how to manage your money. Of course,
definitely not, because we're both still working. So obviously we don't know what the heck we're doing.
We don't know what we're doing either. Yeah, we both have day jobs still. That's just the jobs we have. So clearly we've not figured out how to win the lottery, nor how to create a Warren Buffett massive passive income.
That's correct.
But
these changes do impact just about everybody.
Just about, yeah. The rent to deduction was a big thing for me because it hasn't changed a long time. Impacts people that work for me, right? The staff. The deduction for children is something I've always supported, as well as the same thing with the dependents. I mean, but you know, children deduction, I hear a lot from my friends. I'm childless, as you all know, but I have friends with children. I do hear about this issue over and over again. And of course, the senior circuit breaker is the big one, and the state tax. Those are the big four that, you know, I think I've had the strongest interest in, not because they were opposed to last year's budget, proposals in last summer, but it really does go help my constituents and working class folks. It really, really does. Those are the ones I, you know, have been championing with you for a while. So again, the Senate has to do this. Who knows what the Senate proposal will look like? We'll see what occurs. And then obviously the governor's already signaled quite a few times that she's interested in a tax proposal, and we incorporate some of her interest. And the budget comes out today, and then we'll probably chit chat next week about what's in the House Ways and Means budget. And then you'll probably catch, hopefully, me not in the chamber running back and forth to vote when we talk next during the budget week debate. That being said, I am still in room 42, folks. 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. We have folks in the office, and I've been popping in the outer office more often as I'm in there long enough to drop my stuff and run to a meeting. you see me dash through, trying to get place to place. Tacky.chan at mahouse.gov, tacky.chan at mahouse.gov, mahouse.gov. Definitely going to have a flood of emails coming in as of like 2 p.m. as people finally get to look at the House budget. And of course, State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook and at Tacky Chan on Twitter. Please don't contact me via social media. I get a lot of junk. And of course, I'm getting a lot of junk spam calls on both on my WhatsApp and my text messaging on my phone, which I endure that as much as you all. Go talk to FCC. We can talk about that a different time again. And, keep up with Joe Carolano on his own podcast on keeping with local Quincy news. Visit us here again. We try to do this once a week.
All right. Sounds good, Techie. Thank you so much. Have a great week.
You too, Joe. Take care.